Chapter 30, Monday, September 16th through Saturday, September 21st, 1776. Oh, the houses in New York, if you could but see the insides of them. Occupied by the dirtiest people on a continent, if the owners ever get possession again, I am sure they will be years in cleaning them. A letter from New York in the Morning Chronicle and London Advertiser newspaper. The British Army paraded up Broadway the next day, cheered by loyalists all wearing a red ribbon or flower in their hats in support of the king. I did not see this, of course. I overheard the report that Madame gave the master as they ate supper that eve with their house guests, the two officers who had moved into the bedchambers on the top floor. The highest-ranking men of the British Army had taken over the empty rebel mansions. Lower-grade officers had moved in with loyalist families who had suitable furniture and staff, such as the Lockton's. Only we didn't have a staff. Becky had vanished, her rooms at the Oliver Street boarding house abandoned. I was the only servant in the house. It mattered not. My bones were hollow sticks, my brain pan empty. I cooked a chicken and roasted potatoes and carrots. I left the chicken over the fire too long because Madame ordered the silver polished and the table linens ironed in honor of her guests. The bird was so dry, it near splintered the tongues of the officers. Madame let loose on me in the kitchen after the gentleman had taken Master Lockton to Ashley's Tavern for a night of beer drinking and pipe smoking. It mattered not. When Madame finished scolding me, I set to my evening chores, cleaning out the ashes from the bedchamber fireplaces and carrying them outside, bringing in the firewood and laying the fires in case the night turned cold, turning down the beds, cleaning up from supper, and sweeping the floor. When I finally lay down to sleep, I set Ruth's doll beside my head. I had stopped kissing it goodnight. I did not say prayers. My bones were hollow and my brain pan empty. Madame ran me like a donkey all the next day, then demanded that I stay awake all night to make rolls for breakfast because the bakers in town were rebels and they had fled. I did as she ordered and ruined two perfectly fine batches of dough. I threw them down the privy and baked cornbread deep in the night, for that was one thing my hands knew how to bake. The cornbread burned to charcoal when I fell asleep, head on the table. It mattered not. 3 mornings after the invasion, a message was delivered to the master as I served the coffee. I set the note on a small silver tray and carried it into the drawing room. The officers were in the middle of excusing themselves from the table, buttoning up their coats and putting on their hats. After the master said his good days to them, he opened the note. "A social invitation?" Madame asked. "Or business?" "Neither," Lockton said. "It's a desperate plea." He handed the note across to his wife. "Aunt Seymour is in need of our Sal. All of her Dutch girls fled, and she is without servants." Madame snatched the paper from his hand. "Surely she can do for herself. We have company. Why should we go without a servant?" "We have only 2 men lodging here. Somehow Aunt has managed to take on a dozen Hessian brutes. She requires our assistance." Madame gave a little shudder. Hessians. The hired soldiers from Germany had a fearsome reputation. She crumpled the paper. "I will not perform housework like a common wench. Tell her to hire someone." "The times demand sacrifices, Anne. Just for a week or so. Women will soon come to the city looking for work, and you and our aunt will be able to hire a full staff." Madame scowled into her cup. "You favor her over me, Elihu. It's unseemly." Lockton wiped his mouth with his serviette. "The loan of the girl is the least we owe her. I hope you regret your decision to send away the sister. Even small hands would be helpful now." His mention of Ruth so startled me, I near dropped the tray. Madame bit back the hot words in her mouth, picked up her serviette, and cleaned off her chin. "You will clean the kitchen and prepare the dinner, girl. Then you will take yourself to the house of Lady Seymour and do what she requires of you." Lockton shook his head. "No, Sal. You will leave immediately." I took a clean apron and Ruth's doll with me to Lady Seymour's house. In truth, I did not walk there quickly. In truth, I dawdled something fierce. Folks said that Hessian soldiers were fire-breathing monsters who walked about with swords drawn and blood on their chins. I figured that would be as bad as Madame. I was near correct. They did not breathe fire, though they spat when they talked. nor did they walk about waving their swords, though some sported knives in their boots. None had blood on their chins, except when they ate rare cooked meat. I found it hard not to stare at the enormous mustachios that sprouted under their noses, especially when the men combed and waxed them and twirled the ends. Their speech sounded like they were swallowing rocks, but Lady Seymour understood them. She learned the German from her husband, she said, same way she learned the Dutch. There were all manner of secrets locked in that old skull. When I served them supper my first night, a couple of them said Danke to me. Lady Seymour explained that Danke is German talk for thank you. She told me not to be afeard, that they were just soldiers far away from home. A couple of them were fond of her cat, she pointed out. How could men who like cats be bad? She tolerated them fair enough, except for the muddy boots on the furniture and when they spread butter on their bread with their thumbs. That made her gasp and go pink in the face. I practiced saying Danke when alone. The work at the Seymour house was every bit as tiring as it had been at Madam's. More so because there were more mouths to feed and boots to clean and basins to fill and linens to wash and coats to beat free of dust. Lady Seymour made sure I ate a proper meal 3 times a day and let me sleep in the tiny attic bedchamber on the bed where I laid after my time in the stocks. It was hot up there, but there were no mice nor worms in the floor when it rained. The city swelled by the hour with loyalist refugees who wanted to live under the protection of British cannons. Some of the folk returning from exile were surprised to find strangers had taken over their houses and were sleeping in their beds and wearing the clothes they left behind. There were many fistfights, a great deal of name-calling, and threats of duels. The British didn't mix in with the arguments. They had war on the brain, drilling their soldiers from sunup to sundown. At the Middle Dutch church, they pulled out the pulpit, the pews, and the floorboards and let the horses of the Light Dragoons practice. Horses in a house of the Lord made some folks grumble, including Lady Seymour. Up to the tea water pump, I found only unfamiliar faces, slaves who had freed themselves by joining the British. I could not bring myself to speak to them. The old man we called Grandfather had vanished. Maybe he had started his own revolution and led Corzine and the other slaves over the River Jordan to freedom. A fanciful notion. 'Twas useless to ponder such things. Friday stretched long and longer because the Hessians had moved in 5 more of their countrymen. I heard Lady Seymour arguing with the fellow in charge, but he would not listen to her pleas. I spent the afternoon chopping a field's worth of cabbage while a half pig roasted in the pit dug by the men in the flower garden. The soldiers ate their supper and drank more beer than I thought a body could hold. They lost the few manners they possessed and used the table linens for blowing their noses. It was a relief when they finally left for merrymaking elsewhere. I prepared a tray of supper and served it to Lady Seymour in her bedchamber, the one room where she could find peace. When my chores were done, I climbed to my attic room, kicked off my shoes, and lay down on the bed without even removing my skirt or bodice. Ruth's doll lay next to my head, her eyes staring up at the ceiling. I knew I ought to pray for Ruth, or for Mama, or for anything. I ought just pray. But the words would not come. I feared the spirit had left me. I slept. When I woke, the city of New York was consumed with burning hellfire.